3. Welcome to Working Musicians, a feature of theworkingmusician.com. I'm your host, Roger Z. So happy to be here presenting live music in a digital world. My special guest today, a repeat offender, Petey Hopp.
In many ways.
How you doing, Pete?
Good, Roger. Thanks for having me back. I appreciate it.
I'm so glad to have you. Last time you did the trio thing. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. This time it's solo guitar. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay. And this dovetails right into the thing you do every Monday night in Pleasantville. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. At
Lucy's. Lucy's in Pleasantville. Yeah, I've been running the open mic there. It's going to be 4 years this summer or late spring.
Wow.
And it's mostly an acoustic format, although we do get people who bring some amps and we have some drums on occasion, but, you know, some congas and that kind of thing. But I do really try and encourage original music at it because I think there's such a great scene for it. You know, people you've had here before, like Mishti. Mishti comes and plays. Manny, who's going to be here next week, Manny Cregan, who I'll be actually playing with next week. And, you know, Jeff Hartwell, Rich Kelly, all the people you probably know from the local scene. You know, who are coming in to play, and I wanted to have an outlet for all of us to play our stuff and play it together, you know. That was the aim, anyway.
It's interesting. Growing up, for me, in the 60s, there was a big folk scene. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now it seems like most of the songwriters scene is based out of Nashville.
Mm-hmm. So, yes and no. I guess there is a scene down there. I think there's a bunch. I mean, you know, there's obviously that one. L.A. has that whole hotel cafe thing, which has spawned like Sarah Bareilles and a bunch of other people. You know, so there's scenes around, you know. I think a lot of people just go to Nashville because that's a place where you can really, they're looking for people, for songwriters to cover, to have material covered.
Right, it's a machine and you got to feed the beast.
Right, and it is a beast.
So, this is not the only jam that you run.
No.
Tell me about the other ones.
Well, obviously every Monday at Lucy's is pretty much regular every Monday. The only couple we take off is, you know, like maybe Labor Day or whatever, but generally no. Wednesdays I do an open blues jam, which is pretty strict blues, only because it keeps the format easier for everybody coming up to play. And there's a really a huge world of blues tunes that you can play and you can choose from, you know. So that's every Wednesday at the Hyde Park Brewery in Hyde Park, New York. And there, we've been there over 7 years. I think it's going on 8 years. And it's still going really well. Still have a great pool of people to play. And it's a great blues jam. And then do every second Thursday of the month at a newer place called 12 Grapes, which is in Peekskill. Turning out to be a great live music room. The owners really support live music. Rich and Gene Cadidio, they really, you know, are trying to make it happen. They have music, I think, 5 nights a week. I think it's, well, Wednesday through Sunday, anyway. And it's a great little spot. Every second Thursday of the month I do it, but there are other jams there. You know, I think there's a blues jam, I think, every first Thursday. Mine's mostly acoustic, and again, they have a house kit of drums there. There's a bass amp, so if people bring stuff, I'm not averse to having it happen. And, you know, same thing. I'll play some original songs, start it up, and then what happens, happens, you know. People will come and play. People will do originals, covers, whatever they want to do.
What's nice is those three locations are far enough apart that you don't really cannibalize.
Right. Yeah, I do get some of the crossover, obviously, between 12 Grapes and, pardon me, and Lucy's, but in a good way, because people want to play both places. You know, 12 Grapes has their own sound system, and it's, you know, they got a stage with the lights, and it's you know, and now Lucy's now put up a stage and lights, so they're having music 6 nights a week. They have 2 other jams on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and so, you know, it seems like the scene is really starting to open up for, you know, and there's people coming to the jams because they want to play, and there's really some great songwriters. I've met some really great young guys come into the Monday one. You know, Buffalo Eskimos, a young band, Aaron Main, one of their friends, and some other people. You know, I basically met Manny Cregan, who's going to be here next week through the Monday jam. We've become really tight friends, and, you know, so there's been a lot of people come in to play that are just, you know, I would never have expected that all these talented people would come in, you know.
It was funny. I was watching Dr. Zhivago. Mm-hmm. I discovered my town has a pretty good, White Plains, yeah, has a pretty good DVD collection in the
library.
Yeah, why not take 5 out a week?
Absolutely. Support your local library and save yourself some money.
Right. So Dr. Zhivago, of course, at the end, the closing scene is this guy and his girlfriend, and she's carrying a balalaika on her back,
right.
And he's raving about how talented she is.
Right. I remember that. We'll watch that one again. It's a classic film.
Yeah, so it's great, man. You're out there, you're playing.
Mm-hmm. You know, there's things are changing, as you've probably seen. You're some musician as well, so you know, it's changed. It's not like you would just book gigs and you could play gigs. I mean, you know, as a local musician, working musician, you know, if you're going to stay in one area, you have to diversify. I mean, as you know, people may not know, I teach guitar, do that 4 or 5 days a week, you know, do session work. I have traveled a bit. I went to Greece over the holidays with a fellow named Mitch Woods. There's a great boogie-woogie piano player. I've been doing some festivals with him over the summer and such. You know, got 11 nights paid in Greece, played in Athens. It was a great time. And, you know, and then also, like, you know, try and get your stuff. Now, how you break isn't, you don't get a record deal so much anymore. But you get your songs placed in TV and film and things like that. And a couple of good friends, Manny Cregan, who's going to be here next week, as I said. Another good friend, Will Van Sice, who's a great guitar player. Three of us just wrote a theme song for a TV pilot. So hopefully that will get picked up, and you know that will another source of income. You know, and it's not how you would think you would, you know, make music 20 years ago for a local musician. You know, but those things are opening up now that the digital revolution has happened. You know,
Terry Lamar, mm-hmm. her brother, mm-hmm. Bass player for 30 years. Mm-hmm. He wrote a book mm-hmm. about his life as a general business musician.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of it took place in White Plains and music stores and clubs that no longer exist
right,
here.
Right.
And as we were talking, he's mm-hmm. been making $100 per gig for the last 30 years.
Right.
But what he does mm-hmm. is, like you're talking about songs and product, you know, songs mm-hmm. for TV and stuff. In his book, he has a chapter. He got together with these two other guys, and they hooked up with someone who, like, calls him up, says,
yeah.
I need a song
right.
about this,
right.
sung loud and angry.
Right.
And in a day, 24 hours, it'll
back.
Be done.
Yeah.
You'll give it to them, it'll be on TV, and they make good money that way.
Yeah. Well, that's that kind of what happened with the TV theme, because Will Van Sice, it was actually somebody called him, so this is what we need. And what he envisioned, Will envisioned more of like a big band tune, and he doesn't have a lot of experience with that. He brought the song to me. He had basically the lyrics and the general idea. I basically helped him finish writing the structure of the song, and then we brought it to Manny Cregan, who we figured would sing it and write the horn parts, and he did. He wrote great horn parts, and the three of us worked really well together. Like, and when we went into the studio, same thing. You have a week to get it done. You know, they've already taped the pilot, so it's got to be done in a week. So we went in, we recorded it, and, you know, we found out that the three of us work really well together, you know. And when we all agreed on something, it was a better product than if one or two of us did, you know.
Why did you not sing on it?
We thought Manny's voice would be better suited for the style. It was more like a crooner style, and he's got a little bit better classic voice for that. You know, he's a better singer than I am, I think, you know.
That's so funny, because in this book, that's what he does.
Right.
He's one guy's got the crooning voice, and one's
right.
got the loud, angry
right.
rock singer voice.
Right, right. right. And that's, you know, and that's not like, when you do that kind of stuff, it's not like you're recording it for yourself. You have to fit the mold, you know. And so we even kind of wrote some things into the song, horn parts and other things wise, that we went back and changed later, because it was like, you know, we said, you know what, that's what we like. But this has to serve the purpose of being an intro to a TV show, that it has to fit that, not what we would necessarily hear for it. You know, so in the editing process, you go and you take stuff out, and, you know, you throw it all at the wall, and what sticks, sticks, and you take out what doesn't work.
Now, did you pay money to go into a studio to do it?
We had a small budget. Yeah, we had a budget, and we came out a little bit over, but for the amount that we came out over, we got a really great product that we're very happy with.
Because these guys, basically, you know, one guy on the three-person team is
yeah.
a drum programmer,
right.
and everything goes straight to Pro Tools,
yeah.
so they don't have the cost of
yeah.
a studio.
Yeah, we probably eventually will do that. We don't have the space set up right now to record live drums and everything. That's why we went to the studio, basically just to track everything live. And we did a mix while we were there. But then what happened was, is when they actually synced it to the tape, the voice didn't pop, and we needed to remix it. So then we took it to Manny's house. He's pretty good with, you know, he has, I believe, Logic is what he uses. So he used that and we got a much better vocal edit in the end, because we had the time to sit with it and sit with each line. We weren't under the gun of the clock.
But it didn't cost you any extra.
Right. So, and then this way, you know, we got a much better product in the end anyway that we're happy with.
Very cool.
Yeah.
How about playing some music for our audience?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to, man. Let's do that.
Just careful, because you got that cord you're attached to.
Yes, thank you.
No, you can't go that way.
Yeah, let's...
There you go. You're good to go.
This first song I wrote, I had. I kind of, when I write songs, to me, they don't have a time. And when I'm writing them for myself, I don't have a time frame. I let them simmer and I'll work on it. If it doesn't, if I lose the inspiration, I stop, I come back. This is one of those songs that I recorded, like the initial guitar part was. And I recorded that on something almost 20 years ago. I forgot about it because it was on like one of those micro cassettes, which I stopped using years ago.
Right.
And then I found it and I was transferring it to, at that time, cassette tape, you know. So I found it, oh, I played it again. I started humming a melody over it, put it down for like another 5 or 6 years. And about 4 years, my brother died about 8 years ago, I think it's going to be 8 years this year. And shortly after, we went to the grave to visit me, my older brothers, a cousin, and another friend. Just to, you know, on the day that he died, went just to hang out, had a couple beers, hung out. And a couple nights later, I started strumming that again, and the song wrote itself like that. So it was like, you know, the song, it came when it came, you know. Then I just added an intro, and here it is. It's called Hallelujah Baby.
That one to Jethro Tull.
Use a flute on that?
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. Nice.
Cool.
Very
cool.
Nice.
Thanks.
You know, when I went to college up in Massachusetts, mm-hmm. we had a little coffee shop called Chumley's, and you know, guys who had one or two albums, who were kind of solo artists, would come through, pass through. There was some money.
Yeah, right.
I don't think that's there anymore.
Well, there's probably someplace else that is. I mean, there's always something that will. Pardon me, I had to get a little raw from last night, the jam. So there's some room that takes its place, it seems. You know, there's always some place, you know, people can make music and do it. I mean, you know, for better or worse. I mean, some clubs get you better than others, you know.
That's for sure. So what do you got next?
I got a couple songs. I think I'll do this one. This one's called Porter. This is about the idea that, you know, sometimes you get into relationships with people and they have their pre-existing baggage, so to speak, before you get in a relationship. And when you do get in, they just want you to carry it all. And they want you to be their porter and carry their emotional baggage. And it's kind of basically like that. So, and how you get into those relationships, you know, sometimes it's through, you know, through an intimacy angle, you know, sex, whatever, and then you find out about it later and it's hard to keep it going. This one's called Porter.
Feel to your stuff.
Thanks, man.
Want to do another?
Yeah, no more, sure. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I'm going to try this one. Let's do this song I wrote years ago after my brother died. What happened was my oldest brother-in-law, who was basically my oldest brother, married my sister Carol when I was about 4 or 5, died very suddenly the October after September 11th. Had a heart attack. My older brother died a month later. My sister-in-law almost died of an ectopic pregnancy in between then, and following my brother's death, both my mother and father both had heart operations. So my whole family was just, you know, our stress level was way over. And I started to have panic attacks, started to freak out. And basically I wrote the song, you know, as a parallel to, you know, everybody's got a levee. Wherever your emotional levee is, it can break when you get to that point. And so I wrote this, 7 years ago, 8 years ago, whatever it was. And 7 years ago, yeah. And of course, lo and behold, a couple of years later, you know, Katrina happens, you know, so I started singing the song, you know, the whole time. People thought I wrote it about Katrina. And I explained that because I didn't, you know, and not that I, you know, I think it was an awful episode. And people were trying to say, oh, you should try and, you know, get it out there now. And I felt that that would be really almost predatory to cash in on that sort of natural disaster. And even though the song could have been construed to be for that, but it wasn't, but it's called A Levee.
shining on a delta, sleepy like a tomb. Full moon shining on a delta, sleepy like a tomb.
Thank you, Petey Hoff.
Thank you. Thank you.
Cool.
What a time to
take it from the top.